Thank you. Thank you, everybody, especially Santiago for the introduction, as well as sending out the invitation earlier last year. A couple of points I'd like to make before we go into the talk. The first one is, unfortunately, I have to leave for the airport soon after this gets over. The only direct flight available I had today was at 2:50. So I'm not running away from any questions that you may have had. Very interested in your feedback, comments, questions. Santiago has my contact email, so if you want to carry on a discussion about the issues that we're going to talk about, please do get in touch. The second point is a disclaimer up here, and this is really the first time I'm putting a disclaimer like this. We had an incident earlier in our bank involving somebody else where, you know, there was some reputation exposure and which rattled some executives. So, you know, one of these days we'll get to modeling reputation risk as well. So we are going to talk about, well, one more thing before we get on. I just want to mention a word about the ABA Data Consortium, because that was part of the introduction. It's a small data consortium. There are only 10 members, but it's a pretty homogeneous group. These are all U.S. banks, regionals of sizes. You know, there is a size variation from about 20 billion to 250 billion, but all regionals and all U.S. banks. So with that, we move on then into the talk, which is about analytic approximations for operation risk capital. And the spirit in which, you know, I would pose all of this to you is not necessarily as the solution to create a model for operation risk which gives out numbers that you'd report in your bank, but more to learn about the structure of this problem, to learn about the dependence on capital on the characteristics of the frequency, on the characteristics of the severity, on the characteristics of the dependence structure, and so on. Standard loss distribution approach framework, we've gone over this several times already, yesterday, today. You've of course seen it many times before as well. We have several units of measures or cells. In each of those, we model frequency and the severity distribution. On top of these cells is a dependence structure. That's the core of the model. And then you have a way to aggregate all this information and get your multi-cell or aggregate loss distribution function, G of X, and then based on your confidence level of quantile Q, you invert the distribution function to get your value at risk capital. For all practical purposes, and know of only one case, which is generally not used, there are no closed form solutions of this aggregate severity function. So it's typical to employ numerical methods. Among those, Monte Carlo simulation, fast Fourier transform, Pangea regression. Monte Carlo simulation, as we heard a couple of times yesterday, is generally the preferred one because it provides most flexibility in implementation. Advantages, these are, you know, once you have the code written down, it's really not much to do from there, easy to implement. Fairly robust because they work for really a wide variation of parameters of the frequency severity distribution. Disadvantages, you know, they are time consuming, particularly Monte Carlo simulation. We heard some interesting ideas yesterday about reducing the computation time with some modifications of the standard Monte Carlo simulation. Nonetheless, in general, I think it's fair to say numerical methods will take time, especially if you want to resolve to a high quantile. In some sense, these are black boxes. You know, you're inputting a number, you have an algorithm, you get out a number. It doesn't really clearly illustrate the structure of the problem. And by that mean, I mean your output is a capital. It doesn't really help you understand how the capital depends on the characteristics of the frequency, the severity, or the dependence. Of course, you can do many, many simulations, which is expensive to do, and get a sense of how capital moves with these underlying characteristics. But then you just get a sense. You don't have a very confirmed or clear knowledge of what the dependence is. Analytic approximations, the aim there is to, in this context, essentially replace the function that you're trying to approximate or part of it with some simple closed-form functions whose behavior you know very well. Once you have that, you know, it's simple to compute in terms of getting out numbers. But the big piece is that it makes explicit the connection between what the quantity you're interested in and the underlying characteristics. The disadvantage here, and it is something we have to be careful with approximations, analytic approximations, is typically they're not valid for all ranges of parameters in the sense that the error of the approximation is not uniform. It depends on what parameters you're working with. And so you have to be very careful of the parameter regions in which these approximations can be valid. Just a conceptual picture of sort of a severity frequency plane. We often talk of high severity, low severity, high severity, meaning heavy severity tails. We have high frequency, low frequency. In terms of these quadrants, the quadrant in the upper corner, high severity, high frequency, is really not where reality lies. The low severity, low frequency risks are certainly there. But in terms of if our objective is really overall capital of the institution, they don't have a significant contribution. The two areas, high frequency, low severity, and low frequency, high severity, have the potential to have significant contributions to overall capital. And so there's some interest in seeking approximations in these areas. This talk really is going to focus on just the high quantile asymptotics. We have started looking at the high frequency asymptotics. I'll just briefly mention what our thinking is there. You know, the central limit theorem or the generalized central limit theorem in case of if the variance of the severity does not exist, in general you get alpha stable distributions, a normal distribution if the variance exists. The problem with those is that the convergence rate depends on what quantile you're looking at. So if you're interested in a high quantile, you probably have to go to very large frequencies in order to achieve errors with which you can live with. However, one could conceivably think of estimating lower quantiles using high-frequency approximation, and then using those results to speed up a Monte Carlo simulation, for example. That would get you high quantile. So those are just some ideas that we're exploring. So as I said, we are going to concentrate on the high quantile asymptotics. And the first part of the talk is going to be an approximation for the single cell. One cell, one frequency distribution, one severity distribution. This was work that was done about 5 years ago and published a little later in 2007. So I'm not providing detailed references in here because those are in the paper. Some background as to where we saw things and what are the questions we asked that led us to this work. You can write an expression for the distribution, aggregate distribution function g of x as a sum product, which involves the frequency mass function and the n-fold convolution of the severity distribution. We are interested in high severity regions, so we are looking at severity distributions which are heavy-tailed. For simplicity, we just look at power law tails, which is just a simple subset of more general heavy-tailed distributions. So you have this shape parameter or tail parameter, Kasai, which you have seen before, enter as an important parameter in all of this. We've also heard several times in this forum the well-known first-order approximation for the tail of the aggregate loss distribution, which is given by the mean of the frequency times the tail. And the print was such that the bars on top of these letters did not come out. So this is G bar, which refers to the tail. This is F bar, which refers to the tail. Even if you didn't know this approximation, I think if you heard the talks yesterday, I think most of the talks mentioned this. It has been around for quite a while, about 30 years or so, 20, 30 years. And the question we asked then was, well, how well does it perform with the kind of parameters that we see in practice? And can this be improved? Can this approximation be improved? Can we find a correction to this term which will A, improve the approximation from a numerical point of view, and B, help us understand a little more the structure of the dependence of capital on frequency severity characteristics? And it turned out the answer is yes, one can find a correction to this first order term. And the way one goes about it is essentially looking at the remainder term, which is R of X, which is the difference between the tail of the distribution that you're trying to approximate and its first order approximation. And it turns out we didn't really have to do the heavy lifting. The heavy lifting was already done in the 80s, laid out in two papers by Omi and Willikens from 86 and 87. And the fundamental result that sort of drives all this is really an asymptotic approximation of the n-fold convolution of the severity distribution. The second order approximation for that convolution. And there are two cases that come up. One is the finite mean case, where the tail or shape parameter Ksi is less than 1. And the other one is the infinite mean case, where the tail index is 1 or greater than 1. I believe the 86 paper had the result for the infinite mean, and the 87 paper had the result for the finite mean. So we use this result, and then you can derive the asymptotic approximation for the remainder term, leading to a second order correction, this well-known single loss result. If you look at the second order correction, you'll notice, so if you look at the first order term, the single loss approximation, the only characteristic of the frequency that figures in is the mean of the frequency, nothing else matters, and the tail of the severity distribution. The body does not matter. If you look at the correction, the second order correction, it involves the second order of the frequency distribution. So it's not just the mean, but the second moment of the frequency distribution also matters. And I should mention this notation here because it's important. Capital sub I is the integrated tail function. It's just the integral of 1 minus f. So if you think of the distribution function, you do 1 minus of that and then integrate it. So the area under the tail function is what f sub I is. And that enters into the second order term, which means information from the body then of the severity distribution is entering into the second order term. Not all the details of the body distribution, but just an integral measure of the body distribution. So the next step was to find out if these approximations are any good. And for that, we simulate the single cell case. In order to do simulation, we have to make concrete choices for the distributions. For the frequency, we chose Poisson. We also chose negative binomial because we see the occurrence of the second moment in the second term. So one would think that there would be some differences between the two cases. For the severity distribution, because we are in the heavy severity regime, we chose the generalized Pareto distribution as a proxy for the tail. And then we chose log normal for the body. Now, the choice of the body distribution here is really not critical to the results that I'm going to show you, for the reason that if the second order approximation is good, so the range of parameters for which the second order approximation is good, only an integral measure of the body determines the capital. So if you fit a body distribution, any body distribution that fits the data well, this F sub I is going to be not much different from one distribution to the other. And so the second order result is not going to be much different whether you chose log normal or log gamma, as long as that distribution fits your data well. So we're not losing a lot of generality here by making the specific choice of the log normal distribution. We impose a continuity condition just to make the function nice on the density function, so that's where the body and tail join. In order to make it continuous, we impose the second condition. So the next couple of slides all are from this reference that I gave you where we show the quality of the first order and second order approximations. Epsilon is the error in the approximation. A positive number here means that these approximations are underestimating the true capital. Epsilon 1 is the error from the first order approximation, the single loss approximation. Epsilon 2 is the error once you include the second order term. And we show the results for a couple of variations in the quantile, as well as the point where the tail attaches to the body. The main result here is that the second order approximation does improve, often significantly, over the first order approximation. Both approximations suffer as you get into regions where the tail is less heavy. So above the psi of 1, where you're in the infinite mean case, even the first order approximation in most cases works fine. Between the region 0.5 to 1, where you have a finite mean but an infinite variance, and empirically, we have found that majority of the tail indices that we work with actually fall in this region, 0.5 to 1. There, the first order often doesn't do that well. You get errors 10%, 20%, 30%. But the second order approximation, even 40%, but the second order approximation can bring the error down to half or one-third of the error of the first order. But both suffer as you get closer to this finite infinite variance boundary, where, you know, after that, these are really not practical. It's not much practical use. Yes? 100. Yeah. For. Correct. That is correct. But on average, yeah. I mean, it's a sample from, correct. 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 This is how the errors behave with respect to the body of the distribution. I mentioned the body figures in So this integral measure f sub I. So you can vary that quantity and see how the errors behave. If the contribution from the body is larger, so let's say Fi body of 0.8 as opposed to 0.4, the errors are larger because the body contributes more to the aggregate loss sums. So the dominance of those large losses is decreased, and so your approximation, which is based on large losses, deteriorates, worsens. And of course, if the contribution from the body is smaller, like 0.4, the approximations improve. The earlier charts that we have shown was where for Fi 0.6, which is right in between those. Yes. This is relative error. So it's the simulated, the true, quote-unquote true, minus the approximation over the true. So these are underestimates, yeah. Finally, this shows the variation of these errors with respect to characteristics of the frequency. Remember, the charts that we showed earlier were for a Poisson distribution and a mean of 100. So in the first plot, we change the mean value of the frequency, increase it to 1,000, and decrease it to 10. As you increase the frequency for the less heavy tail severities, your error really shoots up. And this is, intuitively, you can think of it as you increase the frequency, there are larger number of terms involved in the sum of the aggregate loss, which reduces the dominance of those large losses. If you go over to a negative binomial distribution, which is what this last plot is, and introduce the parameter phi here, the phi is the dispersion parameter, which is the ratio of the variance to, I believe, the square of the mean, which for the Poisson case, as you know, phi is zero. It's not quite the ratio. It's 1 plus phi is the variance over the square of the mean. So for Poisson, phi is zero, where the variance is equal to the mean. For negative binomial, phi is greater than zero. The variance is larger than the mean. So if you introduce dispersion in the frequency, what we find is that the errors, and this doesn't show a direct comparison, you actually have to flip the charts, but errors increase, especially for these lighter tail severity distributions. And I think the intuition behind that result is that if you think of if you're adding dispersion, you're going from Poisson to a negative binomial distribution, not only is it increasing the variance, but it's increasing the skewness on the high frequency side, and the effect is similar to the effect that you see for larger mean frequency. Quick recap and stop for a minute if there are any questions in this section. For very severe tails and infinite mean severities, first order approximation is generally works out well. It's a practical approximation. The second order approximation still is valuable in the region of 0.5 to 1, which is really the region of most interest to us, where the first-order approximation often doesn't provide reasonable results. Finally, just a caution in using these results, as you've seen, the error is not uniform. It depends on the underlying parameters. And so you really need to do a first set of simulations to identify ranges of parameters where the error is in an acceptable level. And it's really in those ranges that you should make use of these approximations. Any questions on this part of the talk? Okay. So it was natural then to try and think about, well, we have these approximations for a single cell. If you go to many cells, which is, again, as in modeling, you start with something simple and then refine your model step by step in trying to inch closer to reality. So we in practice, we have many cells or units of measure. So the natural extension to all this was to think about what happens in the case of multiple cells with some kind of dependence. We've been doing this work for about 2 years, working paper, not really shared, lying on a shelf. So someday it'll see the light of day. Now, mentioned we do want to incorporate some dependence. It turns out that if you stay within the static framework where you're working with distributions, once you introduce dependence among severities or dependence among severity and frequency, you lose real analytic tractability of the problem. You can't even write down the aggregate loss severity as a convolution. If you assume dependence only among frequency, then there is a chance for doing some analytic approximation. So analytic tractability is certainly a big part why we made this assumption. But that's not all of it. I mean, if that was the only reason, but this assumption was really contradicting reality, this again would be of not much use. There's some intuition, and you have heard, I think there are some other institutions also that are thinking along these lines of imposing dependence only on the frequencies. There's some intuition behind this as well, that the effect of the underlying parameters, underlying drivers of an operation risk process affect the frequency more than do the severity. Again, this is not saying that severity is not affected by changes in controls or anything like that, but that the effect on frequency is of a higher order than its effect on severity. And it's the core movement of these underlying drivers then that, of course, shows up as a dependence or association at this multicell level. There's also some indirect empirical evidence. And the way to think about this is you can use data to estimate correlation among frequency of cells. Certainly something that we can do today and we have done. And then using this model, you can get what the implied correlation is at the aggregate loss level. And then you can compare this implied correlation at the aggregate loss level with what you see empirically at the aggregate loss level. And the idea is that if the implied correlation at the aggregate loss level explains most of what you observe empirically, then this assumption is, in a way, consistent with reality. So you're not making a direct check that severities are independent or anything like that. It's not possible to really do that, but this is an indirect empirical evidence that this kind of assumption can lead to practical models. Now, what I'll show you is really the two-cell case, and then I'll comment on the extension to the multi-cell case, more than two. For the two-cell case, again, you can write down the severity distribution. Now, the aggregate loss is the two-cell aggregate loss. And it's a similar expression except that now you get the joint frequency distribution in the expression. Once again, we benefited from work that was done earlier. Not only the first order results are used here, which are the results that I pointed to earlier in 86 and 87 by Omi and Wilkins. There's another paper by Omi from 94 that talks about an approximation for the convolution of two functions, two different functions. So it's not the n-fold convolution of the same function. So combining really all these three results, doing a little bit of algebra, one can get a second order correction for this aggregate severity in the tail region. Now recall that in the first single-cell case, we had two cases that we had to deal with in terms of expressions. One was the finite mean case, infinite mean case. So when you go with it to the two-cell case, you get three possibilities. Finite mean case, where tail severities of both cells are less than one. Infinite mean case, where they are both greater than one, and the mixed case. I'll present the results just for one of the cases here, the finite mean case, but there are similar results for the other two cases. So this is the underlying results that drive out of this. The first one, which is obtained from a combination of the results in those papers I mentioned earlier. But then this is the expression for the approximation of the tail of the aggregate loss. So if you look at the terms here, the term 1 and 2 are simply the first order, second order approximations of cell 1, single cell approximation. Terms 3 and 4 are the first and second order approximations of cell 2. So these are all really independent terms in the cell, in the sense that depend on each cell individually. But the two terms that compose 5 are really a mixing terms in the sense that they involve characteristics from both the cells, as well as they involve information from the joint distribution of the frequency. I'll make a couple of observations about this result, but before I get to that, maybe 2 to 5 minute digression. We mentioned earlier about this implied empirical result, so it was sort of, we thought it would be nice to see analytically if we can derive some expressions connecting the correlation of the frequency and the correlation of the aggregate loss level. For linear correlation, it's easy to do. This is an exact result. There's no approximations involved. It turns out that the correlation at the aggregate loss level is always smaller than the correlation in frequency. The only case where it's equal is really not something that you'd encounter in practice, which is point number 2. We should acknowledge that for phi equal to 0, which is the Poisson case, this was already reported in an earlier paper by Fréchot. So this is just a generalization of that. Then in terms of how the value moves with characteristics of the frequency and severity, if you increase the normalized variance, which is the variance over square of the mean, the ratio of rho L to rho decreases. That means there's more separation between the frequency correlation and the aggregate loss correlation. And the intuition there is that as the variance of the severity increases, you're sampling from a much larger support. And so when you form the sums to get the aggregate loss number, you're sort of losing the dependence that's coming in through the frequency. On the other hand, if you increase either the dispersion or the mean of the frequency, then rho L gets closer to rho. Now, this is linear correlation, and remember that this involves the variance of the severities. So for us, this result has limitations in the sense that we generally deal with severities with infinite variance. Nonetheless, this is, I think, a useful result. Now, it's also useful to ask the question, what is the implication of a correlation at the frequency level on tail dependence among aggregate losses? Now, you can't derive an exact result in this case, but you can derive an asymptotic approximation. So there's a relationship between, before we get to relationship, just some definitions. I think I've seen this before yesterday in one or two talks. You have the tail dependence function, which is just the joint probability that samples from the two cells would exceed a certain quantile. And then the asymptotic tail dependence is just a number, which is just the limit of that joint distribution as the quantile goes to 1. I don't show you the derivation, but this is the asymptotic result right here, which connects the tail dependence function to the frequency correlation and involves other characteristics of the frequency and severity. Important point here is that however much you have frequency correlation among the frequency, you are not going to get any asymptotic tail dependence. It's going to be zero. Theoretical result will hold. However, if you're working with finite quantiles, which is what we do, I mean, by that I mean Q not equal to 1, there's going to be some weak dependence that you're going to observe in your empirical data. And so it's of some use to sort of see if you can figure out how that varies with characteristics of frequency and severity. So this result gives us some insight into that. So the tail function, the value increases as the dispersion increases or the correlation increases, and it decreases as the mean of the frequency increases. The dependence on rho, frequency correlation, is obvious intuitively. And one can also think about the dependence on the mean. I don't have a very good feel of why the tail dependence increases as the dispersion of the frequency increases. It's something that I don't have a very good handle on why that happens. Yes. Yes. Correct. So, and this is seeing what's the implication on the tail dependence among the aggregate losses of the two cells. Okay. Let me step back now. As I said, I want to make a couple of observations about this approximation, and then I'll show you some simulation, two-cell simulation results, which will show the characteristics that one can infer from here. Again, gives an idea that these approximations may be of practical value. The first one is sort of trivial one, is that if the tail index of one of the cells is greater than the other, with separation increasing, that cell will dominate, which is a result that you certainly have heard about and seen before, called the single cell domination. The second one is, and let me make some notes here so I don't miss out any points, is that the only term of the joint distribution that figures in the approximation is the joint second order moment, expected value of N1, N2, which means the only characteristic of the dependent structure that figures in the approximation is the correlation. So you could have any copula. As long as you have the same correlation, this approximation is going to give you the same result. Which, in terms of practical implementation, which would mean that you can, as far as frequency dependence is concerned, without loss of generality, work with Gaussian copulas. Finally, if you look at the order of the terms, the order of the mixing terms is of the same order as the second order correction, both involve the density, which is of a lower order than the distribution function. And so as the tails become heavier, the importance of dependence will decrease. Okay, these are not startling things I think people have known either through simulation or intuition, some of these characteristics. So I'll end up with showing you some simulation results which actually show these characteristics. The first one is where we do the two-cell simulation for these parameters. In this case, the identical cells, so the severity frequency are the same. With a correlation of 0.5, we show the results for various copula, as you've heard yesterday. This list of copulas covers a broad range of dependence characteristics. What we plot here is the capital value at risk for the two-cell case as the ratio of the Kaplan independent case. And it does turn out that the choice of the copula does not have any significant effect on the result, which is what we infer from the second order approximation I showed you. Here we look at variation with respect to the tail index. Tail index of 0.6, not a very heavy, but not very heavy, 0.9, a heavy tail index, and then 1.2, which is a very heavy infinite tail index. Again, as we were able to infer from the second order approximation, as your tail index increases, the effect of the dependence decreases. So if you're in a very heavy severity regime, then frequency dependence is really not going to matter. You can just work with the independent case. There's a similar result for phi equal to zero, which is a Poisson case, and it's interesting. You couldn't see it directly from the expressions I showed you, but you can do some algebra and infer this as well, that for the Poisson case, when dispersion is zero, regardless of the tail index, frequency dependence does not really have an effect on the capital. It's the same as you were in totally independent regime. And this is an important point here because typically frequency modeling is not given a whole lot of importance. A lot of us tend to just choose the simplest possible Poisson distribution. And what this is saying is that if you want to use a frequency dependence model, and if you want to get a finite dependence at your aggregate loss level, you cannot do it with the choice of a Poisson distribution. Talk about single cell dominance. I see I have only a few. I do want to give a couple of minutes for questions. What this is showing, the contour are for the ratio of the contribution from cell 1 as the ratio from of the total contribution from cells 1 and 2. So a value of 0.1 would mean that cell 1 is contributing only 1/10 to the total. Value of 0.9 would mean cell 1 is contributing 90% to the total. So the reference cell is cell 1 with a tail index of 0.9, frequency of 100. And what we vary is the severity and the frequency in the second cell. So if you are at 1 on the y-axis where the tail indices are the same, and you are at 1 on the x-axis where the frequencies are the same, you'll end up at a contour value of 0.5. Both contribute equally. But then this gives you a sense as if you vary the severity tail of the second cell, how the contribution changes. But the more important point is typically we when we talk about single cell dominance, we just talk about differences in tail index, but frequency can matter as well. If the frequency between two cells are quite different, then that has an effect on whether a certain cell dominates or not. I'll skip the next plot because it's really saying the same thing. This last one here is simply a direct verification of the second order approximation for the two cell case. Where we plot the error with respect to the tail index. The quality of this approximation is similar to what we saw in the first, in the single cell case. Just a quick comment on the multi-cell case. More than two cells, one can easily extend this. It becomes a little tedious because you then explore the terms combinatorially, pairwise. However, in practice, if you're in a situation where some of your cells are more heavier, have more heavier tail than the others, then really you have to deal with only certain pairs that will figure in your approximation. Recap of the multi-cell case. Approximation depends only on the correlation and the frequency, not on any part of the dependent structure. As the severity tails become heavier, dependence has less effect on the overall capital vis-a-vis the independent case. In case of Poisson, regardless of the tail index, dependence, frequency dependence does not really have any effect. And the quality for approximation for the multi-cell case is similar to the single cell case. So just one more minute left, but we can go a couple of minutes, I guess, over. Thank you.